Hello, I'm Michelle Sawatsky-Koo, and this is the Heroes in Our Midst podcast. Welcome to another episode. This time around, we have found another athlete. Mark Borowiecki is a retired NHL hockey player. He was drafted by the Ottawa Senators and played there for a decade before being traded to Nashville, where, only recently, his playing career came to an end. Mark doesn't only have a hockey story. He's been on a mental health journey of his own, and he's not afraid to talk about it. That journey has brought with it some really dark times. And part of his mission in life now is to help other young hockey players as they navigate the world of professional hockey and all that comes with it. He's now living in Ottawa with his wife and children, doing professional player development for the Nashville Predators. And on the day I caught up to him, he was on his way to meet with their AHL group, the Milwaukee Admirals, in Toronto. So you'll be able to tell, he was literally on the road from Ottawa to Toronto. But I didn't want to miss my chance to get his story and share it with you. So I just went along for the ride. And the first thing I asked Mark was to tell us his story.
So yeah, I actually grew up and born and raised in Ottawa. I was actually the first player ever drafted by the Ottawa Senators who was from Ottawa and then subsequently ended up to go on to play for Ottawa. But grew up in the west end of Ottawa, minor hockey all the way up, had my ups and downs in hockey. Obviously, hockey's a big part of my identity. I think I'd be lying if I said it wasn't, but it's not my whole identity. But, I'll center my life story around that a little bit. Grew up playing minor hockey in Kanata as our suburb. Some ups and downs. I was definitely a late bloomer physically. Wasn't sure what I wanted to do. Got passed over in many drafts. Major, junior, whatnot. No one had any interest in me. I'd actually sent university applications to RMC, Royal Military College, thought I might want to join the military, and applied to some other Canadian universities, was kind of done with hockey at one point. I've always kind of been interested in education, history and geography in particular. I thought about pursuing that, but fortunately enough for me, I had a bit of a late growth spurt. I ended up getting drafted as an older guy into Tier 2 junior outside of Ottawa here, played a couple of years, was fortunate enough to get a scholarship to go play at Clarks University on a hockey scholarship, got drafted, and the rest is kind of history in terms of my pro career.
Yeah, no kidding. Now let's go back to when you were young and started playing, and you said got passed over and all that. Where were you at in terms of just how you felt about that? How did you deal with that? Because, I mean, you persevered.
Yeah, it was tough for sure. I won't lie. When you see all your peers getting drafted, we had local Tier 2 draft, my draft year for the Ottawa Area League. At that point, it was called the Central Junior Hockey League. Everyone I knew was getting picked. There was teams in rounds, I think there was like 10 rounds, rounds 7, 8, 9, and 10 actually passing on draft picks. They would just pass and not pick anyone. And I was just sitting there watching that online. I remember just being crushed. Mm-hmm. Why would a team pass versus picking me? I couldn't really make sense of it. I was certainly undersized, but thought I was capable of kind of taking that next step at some point. So it was hard for sure. Had a lot of love and support from my parents. Kind of encouraged me to do what I want. Made me realize it wasn't all about hockey. My dad's always valued education, especially. He has 2 degrees. My sister has a master's in communication. So I'm always an education first family. So they kind of pushed me in that direction to sort of help deal with some of those emotions that I was feeling in terms of disappointment and being let down. So that certainly helped. But then, I've just always kind of thrown myself into things, and I can kind of relate it back to where I am now in life a little bit, but always kind of had these sort of obsessive tendencies, and I think that actually helped me, in terms of throwing myself into something, really focusing on hockey, wanting to get better, pursuing something. I think things just sort of clicked for me when I did end up getting drafted as an overager into Tier 2 Junior, into that Central Junior League. I went there and I was like, I think if I just push myself a little more, I can actually be a pretty dominant player,
Ended up working out for sure. Now, I think it's important for people to hear that there's such a different, everyone has a different path to their end goal. And I loved how you started by saying, I'm going to tell you my story, and it's a lot surrounding hockey, even though there's a lot more to me than hockey. Although, when you are pursuing a goal like this, it almost has to be mostly focused on what you're trying to reach, doesn't it?
For sure. And I'm pretty open now in my adult life, and this in this season of my life, I'll just tell your listeners right away, I have obsessive compulsive disorder, diagnosed OCD.
Yeah.
I had trials and tribulations for a lot of years with mental health and professional hockey, thinking it was just sort of anxiety, but we were able to hone in on it. And I think when I look at my OCD, I think it's both a pro and a con.
Hmm.
Because those obsessions that I have just allowed me to kind of have this singular focus.
Yeah.
And really throw myself into something. You know, for me, my strength and conditioning regimen, my nutrition, my game day preparation, it was like an all or nothing thing. And I was so dialed in on that, that gave me a lot of success, you know, for a guy who maybe didn't have the same kind of natural talent that a lot of these high-end draft picks do in the NHL.
Yeah.
But it got to a point of diminishing returns, where it consumed my life, especially, you know, when I got married, when I started having children, I was unable to balance any of that, balance my personal life with my professional life. So certainly pros and cons.
For sure. Now, you became known in hockey as quite a fighter. You were the big, tough guy. Well, you weren't big, but you were a tough guy. So what was that like for you, Mark? What was that like for you to be labeled that, or to maybe have that as your role on teams?
Challenging, for
yeah.
sure.
Yeah.
I won't lie. You know, I think it was sort of a calculated decision. You know, I played college hockey for 3 years. There was no fighting in the NCAA. Like, it wasn't something that kind of came natural for me. Having said that, I was gifted physically, and that I was, you know, always very strong in the weight room, just sort of like a natural athlete. So I think when I put two and two together, I'm like, oh, you know, I can use these physical attributes to my own benefit. But, you know, I've always kind of, I guess, as objectively as I can, thought of myself more of sort of a introspective, kind of reflective guy, you know, maybe not your typical hockey player in terms of how I handle myself and my life and whatnot. So I made the decision that, you know, to make my mark in the NHL, I needed to bring it physically every night, and that did entail fighting. When I was younger, I was just, again, sort of a middleweight, more of what we call a gamer. But a gamer is someone who's willing to fight anyone, whether you know you're going to lose or not. So that's how I kind of made my mark and got some people to notice me. But I struggled with it. I had some long, tough, dark periods where fighting really hung over my head. You know, going into morning skate in the morning and seeing a lineup sheet for the other team up and seeing one, two, whatever, three guys who I knew I'm going to have to fight that night. That just ate away at me all day, you know, unable to get my pregame nap in, almost unable to eat, sick to my stomach, stuff like that. But, so to speak, it was sort of my meal ticket at one point in my career. So I think it was a bit of an outlet for negative energy at times, but also it sort of created its own negative energy, kind of this double-edged sword. And then, you know, like, ironically enough, I think when I actually kind of solidified myself as sort of a better fighter in the NHL, someone who was technically more proficient, I was actually, I think, at a much better place mentally. I wasn't fighting out of, you know, sort of fear and anxiety. I was fighting because I started to appreciate the technical side of things a little more. So that's probably another story. But yeah, certainly mixed emotions.
You know, it's amazing to hear your perspective on that because, you know, those of us who watch, I mean, people are like, oh, like some people love that part of hockey, right? That's like the thing. That's what gets them going.
Yeah.
You know, you see the crowd when it starts to happen. And, you know, it's interesting to hear that you actually, there were moments and nights where it was like sort of sleepless and thinking of what you had to do the next day. That's wild.
There's probably more guys around the league like that than most fans would
yeah.
probably realize.
Yeah.
I'm not really a believer that fighting like that is a natural thing. You know, there's not very many guys who do want to do it in pro hockey. And I think, you know, a lot of times people who do want to do it, I would wager a guess that it's masking, you know, probably some other issues that are going on, demons in some other places in their lives. So, it really is a tough one to unravel.
Yeah, for sure. Now, you talked about some dark places that you got into in parts of your career, but yeah, you kept going. So what would you say made that possible? I mean, sometimes people feel in such a dark place that they can't do anything. It's hard to get out of bed, and you actually went and played professional hockey. What do you think it was that sort of got you out of bed the next day?
There was a few different factors for me. You know, the number one thing in my life, motivating factor for me, has been, you know, providing for my wife and my family. That's something that I really wore and took seriously. You know, I love the game of hockey. I think I've almost re-fallen in love with the game of hockey since I retired, funny enough, you know. But I think in that moment, oftentimes hockey was a bit of a means to an end for me. It was, how do I set up my future children and my wife the best way possible? And if it was a burden, so be it. A burden on myself, so be it. Maybe that wasn't probably the healthiest relationship with hockey. And you know, I could probably definitively say that wasn't the healthiest relationship with hockey looking back on it now.
Right.
But also, you know, I've always just kind of been like this intrinsically motivated guy in terms of preparation. You know, I kind of alluded to that earlier. You know, I've never been a guy who's had to get prodded to work hard. That's just kind of been my MO. You know, I had a tough time looking at myself in the mirror sometimes if I knew I hadn't given, you know, myself the best opportunity to succeed in that day or the people around me. There's always that little voice in the back of my head, you know, questioning whether I'd worked hard enough. And again, I guess a theme is kind of me speaking right now is sort of that pros and cons diminishing returns theme. But sometimes that can be, you know, the ultimate motivator and a great healthy thing. And sometimes it can probably poke and prod you a bit too far, but certainly that intrinsic motivation has always been within me.
Yeah. How long were you in the NHL? How long did you play in total?
So I think professionally I was, I believe, 13 years, four in the minors, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
So I started out, came out of college early. We were fortunate enough to win the NHL championship that year coming out of college. Played three additional years in the minors after that. Was a captain in the minors my last year and then went on to graduate full-time after that. So I was up and down as a call-up reassignment sort of guy for those years in the minors. And then really kind of solidified myself after that fourth year playing playing on the farm team. And then I think it was nine full seasons, I can't quite remember, in the NHL.
Would there be some, you know, do you have a highlight or two along the way in your NHL career on the pros side of things, like on the positives?
Yeah, definitely a lot. Probably more than I can recall. you know, obviously special individual ones. You know, you're never going to forget your first NHL game. You're never going to forget your first goal.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. Sort of those big individual accomplishments. And I think, you know, probably some athletes hesitate to say that stuff sometimes. You don't want to come across as selfish. But, you know, hey, like, you've worked your whole life and strived towards that. I think it's important to kind of take stock of what you've accomplished and appreciate that.
Yep.
Having said that, the big things that always stick out to me, I think, as I got later in my career were when I sort of took on those mentorship roles or sort of assigned those mentorship roles. I've always sort of relished, you know, having a young D partner, someone I can try to help out. And I think it just kind of made the perfect segue for me into the job I'm in now in terms of being a development coach, helping guys kind of on the ice and off the ice. So those sort of situations, I can't give you a specific one, but those sort of mentorship roles as an older player, as a more experienced veteran guy, are ones that for me kind of stick out more than anything else. And I had a mentor of my own who played in the NHL for a long time and is now a coach. And when I first broke in, he kind of told me, like, what do you want your legacy to be? Do you want it to be just your on-ice accomplishments, or do you want it to be something more, you know, being known for you, who you were as a person? And he kind of used a metaphor of, like, a 30-year reunion. You know, the people want to come, your ex-teammates want to come sit at the table with you because you scored a bunch of goals, or you know, was it because you were a good person and a good teammate? So that's always kind of stuck with me.
That's really cool. Now, obviously, all these highlights along the way, but when did hockey end for you? How did you know to retire? What was the end of hockey for you, and how did you know you were done?
So I have quite an extensive concussion history.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say documented probably pretty close to double digits.
Wow.
We had our third child before we were due to have our third child heading into that last year, and I was, you know, already sort of weighing whether this was going to be the end or not. Like I said earlier, I really found it difficult for me, you know, being that all or nothing guy, throwing myself into my training, my time at the rink, my nutrition, and really balancing with what I now realize is my number one job in life, and that's being a husband and a father. So, you know, for me, balancing that was growing kind of increasingly difficult. But I did suffer another pretty serious concussion at the beginning of that final season, really early on in October, I believe it was, and had to go to the hospital, get some pretty extensive, you know, scanning done and stuff, just given my history. And my wife and I just kind of looked at each other. I remember just being a wreck in the hospital. I was very emotional, and she just kind of looked at me and she's like, "You're done." And I was like, "Yeah, you know, I'm done." So I think the decision was kind of made for me in that respect physically. But, you know, I think I learned a lot about my own mental health and how that sort of blends in and is so interconnected with brain injuries and head injuries over the course of my career. I'd really sort of muddied the waters there and had a tough time with rehabs and comebacks from head injuries because I'd go down this sort of obsessive rabbit hole about symptoms and recovery. And I think just all of that sort of accumulating over the course of my career made me realize towards the end that, you know, I wanted to kind of prioritize my children and my wife.
Yeah. Have you found now, like, since, so when did you retire? What was the date?
I don't know the exact date. It was this past summer.
So when it wasn't long ago.
I was quite fortunate. You know, I was still, this is my first year out of the league, as not on a player contract. So, I was quite fortunate on Nashville when I told them around Christmas that I wasn't going to be returning to play. You know, in the NHL, we have guaranteed contracts. And I kind of said to them, listen, like, you know, management said, well, what are you going to do? You're going to go home to Ottawa. And I was like, well, no, you know, you're paying me money. I'm going to stay here and try to help out in any way I can. I'm going to be on the dressing room, be in the gym, be a resource for young guys in any way that I possibly can. And Nashville is just amazing. They sort of asked me if I want to try to dip my toe and transition into player development. So I was kind of able to get my feet wet a little bit while still technically under a player contract, sort of just in this mentorship role. And I realized how fulfilling it was for me and that what I want to do going forward is just helping people. So it just sort of made that, again, an easy transition into a full-time role this year, an official role as an actual development coach.
Yeah, I love that. Is that rare, Mark, that someone sticks around with their team when they're on a contract? I mean, that seems like really a cool thing. And I think in amateur sport, a lot of athletes that I've seen and been involved with, they get injured, but they stick around with the team because they're part of that team. But professionally, sometimes we think when they're done, they just sign out. And is that rare what you did?
I'm actually not 100% sure. I don't really know. Ton of other situations. I mean, I'm sure there's probably instances of both, right? There's probably guys in their career who've made enough where they can just go sit on a dock in the Muskokas in Ontario somewhere and not speak to a soul for the rest of their lives. I mean, I've done quite well in hockey, certainly not to that extent. I want to work, I have to work. But I also, again, like, I just kind of had that intrinsic motivation. I didn't want to just duck out of hockey and go hide and feel sorry for myself. I always knew that I wanted to help people. And for a while there, when I was in some dark points in pro hockey, I was kind of jaded, I think, towards the game and wanted to get away from the game as far as I could. I thought about maybe being a police officer. And I had a coach here in Nashville, Todd Richards, when I was really going through a tough time on the road in Tampa one time. He sat me down. I was just a wreck, you know, kind of broke down in front of him. And he said to me, he's like, you know, you've got a PhD in hockey. Like, no matter how your playing career goes, you can always fall back on that. Like, why would you throw that away? And I think that really resonated with me.
Yeah, a PhD in hockey. That is cool. You certainly spend enough time to have earned a degree once you've been a professional athlete. That I know for sure. So do you think that the fact that it wasn't all sort of roses for you, I mean, I'm actually not sure what professional hockey player just goes through the game completely unscathed and just loving every minute. So, but I mean, you had some real dark times, some struggles. Do you try to bring that into your help of others? And have you noticed that some have gravitated towards you being able to actually talk about that in a real way?
For sure. And I think that's what, you know, I'm hoping is going to make me an effective development coach. You know, it hasn't all been, you know, rainbows and butterflies for me in my career. Like, a guy who was picked in the top 10 and never had to play in the minors and never had ups and downs, like, I'm not going to discount what they've accomplished or done. It's amazing. But, you know, what lessons can you pass on to a guy who is struggling, who is kind of toiling away in the minor leagues, who feels like they've been passed over when your career is, you know, kind of been perfectly linear, so to speak. So I think, you know, having that sort of mutual shared experience with guys where, you know, yeah, I've grinded in the minors. Hey, I've gotten called up and been sent down. It sucked. Hey, you know, I've been in a tough place professionally, but also I've been in a tough place personally. Here are some of the mistakes that I made, and maybe you can learn from these and not make these mistakes as well. I think that's valuable stuff to be able to pass on. And, you know, I think when I became more vocal and open about some of my struggles with mental health, I had teammates when I was playing who would reach out to me. And, you know, the way we view development here in Nashville, it's not just on ice. You know, I don't just cut video and tell guys to do stuff on the ice a certain way. Like, certainly there's a bit of that, but I'm also a resource off the ice. We view development here as sort of the more whole human side of things. If a guy's personal life, his mental health is not in a good place, like, you know, typically his on-ice performance isn't going to be there either. So I think there's kind of that synergistic effect that we sort of look at in Nashville.
And isn't it funny? I think old school was more like, well, that side doesn't matter. But I'm sure as you get into this more and more, you're seeing it's actually not that it just is an extra or that it doesn't matter. It's actually essential to their performance on the ice.
100%. Yeah. I have a few thoughts on that, you know.
Yeah.
Like I prefer to view it sort of as that whole human approach. Like, I think we should be treating athletes not just as assets. I think we should be treating them as human beings and try to help kind of grow and nurture them as human beings as well as professional athletes. But, you know, having said that, if you're whatever, a president, a CEO, a GM, whatever it is of a hockey team, and you're looking for on-ice production, and, you know, if you invest time in mental health and mental performance, like, you're going to see on-ice gains in terms of production. Mm-hmm. So why would you not, you know, invest in that? Now, do I think that's the correct approach? Necessarily, no. But if it moves the needle in the right direction in the big picture, then so be it. You know, that's kind of my thought process on it.
Yeah, I love that. I think we can convince even more people to place importance on it by saying, listen, if they're healthy and they're full human beings, you actually are going to win more.
Yeah, for sure. And, like, it's funny, you know, I think young athletes are becoming a little more cognizant of this side of things now. And you ask a guy, you know, how much of the game do you think is mental, or how much of the step up to the pros is mental? And, you know, a younger athlete might say 60%, 70%, whatever, pick some arbitrary number.
Yeah.
And then you ask them, all right, so do you spend 70% of your time training mental performance? And it's right away, it's just a blank stare or no. And I mean, like, hey, I'm not judging. I didn't either, right?
Yeah.
I spend 97% of my time on the physical side of the game and 3% of my time on the mental side.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if we can all agree that at least 50% of the game is mental, why aren't we investing, you know, 50% more time on the mental side of performance?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. That's such a great point, and I think we're working towards that and getting better at it. But it's slow going, and instead of it taking time away from what a lot of coaches feel is important, it just is essential. And I love hearing you say that. And now you're in the development in that profession, so working with these young athletes, which is so very, very cool. You know, listening to your pros and cons and dark times and all that, here's an interesting question for you. And of course, it's put you where you are now, but are you glad you played hockey? Like, would you want your kids to play hockey?
You know, that is such an awesome question. Such a, I think, insightful question, and one that causes a lot of reflection. Like, I'm very happy you asked that. Hockey for me, I think I fell off the rails a bit during my professional career in terms of losing my love for the game. Mm-hmm. I want my children to play, but I want them to have fun and love the game.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want it to be a chore. I never want it to feel like a job for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hockey has given me so much. It fulfilled me in so many ways. Lifelong friendships, lifelong lessons, financial stability, so many things that are just so beneficial. It was demanding. It took a lot from me, too, and I don't think there's anything wrong with saying that.
Yeah.
I think it's about finding balance. You know, I said earlier, I've re-fallen in love with the game of hockey, just being able to be on the ice with guys, doing skills practices, being out here and feeling like a kid again. Like, I lost sight of that. I think for our young athletes in terms of development, I think we need to focus on that again.
Yeah.
And if we can kind of grow that environment and that culture, that's a culture of hockey that I want my kids to be a part of.
Yeah. Yeah, I really like that. And now you can be on that side trying to, you know, ensure that the young players in your care at least have a chance, right, to understand that enjoying the game is also working your butt off at the game, seeing that the positive way that you can actually get there.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm sure I probably sounded like a bit of a politician there giving that answer, saying a lot without saying much and giving a definitive answer, but you know, like, I just think there is a lot of joy and enjoyment out of hard work. Like, there's nothing better than laying it all on the line with your teammates, sitting around the dressing room after and looking at yourself, or looking at each other eye to eye and knowing that you've done that. And, you know, by the same token, there's nothing better, you know, than in the summer going out there and grinding through a seemingly impossible conditioning, getting through it together and knowing that you've accomplished something. But, you know, I still don't want people to lose sight of the fact that hockey should be fun. You know, it is a sport. We all got into it because it's fun and we love it. You know, I've kind of been doing a deep dive in sort of the European model of coaching and development and keeping people engaged and having fun and enjoying things. And I just think is such a beneficial approach.
So here's an interesting question for you. A lot of us are, you know, I mean, I'm listening, so I say us, but people are listening and we're hearing your story, and we will not be NHL hockey players, but many of us get married and many of us have kids. How in the world did you find time, and not just in, I'm not just talking on the clock, but in your whole obsessive nature and all of that you talked about, how did you find time for a relationship? And tell us a little bit about your, you know, that side of your story, if you would. Like, how did you meet your wife? How did you guys get married? And how awesome is she?
She is the best. I just love her more than I can possibly say. And it makes me a little emotional right now even just saying that. But
yeah,
without her, I don't know if I'd be here today. I alluded to some dark times, and I can honestly say that the path I was going down, she helped snap me out of it multiple times.
Yeah.
And again, I'm choking up a little bit because it hits close to home and it's dark times, but she was there for me.
Yeah.
Her name is Tara. She's also born and raised in Ottawa, which is awesome. We never actually knew each other. There's kind of two school boards in Ottawa, Catholic and public, and Catholic. Like, I didn't come from a devout family or anything. We just sort of ended up in the Catholic board. She was in the public boards. We didn't cross over much, but one of my best friends through hockey, who now coaches with the Ottawa Senators, Ben Sexton, his wife and my wife are best friends. They were each other's maids of honor. They introduced us. I played college hockey with Ben. I was the captain at Clarkson when he was a freshman. I remember being at his cottage one time. I was single, and I was just ready to kind of settle down. I wanted to be in a relationship and find someone, and he was like, you know, me and Steph, his wife, were like, we got a girl for you. Her name's Tara, and I was like, great, I'd love to meet her. And they're like, all right, she wants to go or whatever. We'll set up a date for this date. And I actually had, like, a blind date that night. And I was like, oh, God. Like, I just wanted to cancel this other blind date because I wanted to meet Tara so bad. Anyway, it ended up working out. She was a teacher at the time. I was playing in Binghamton, New York, about 4.5 hours south of Ottawa. So she would teach all week. Friday after school, she would drive down for the weekend, spend the weekend with me, watch me play because the American League, the AHL is kind of typically a weekend league. And then in Ottawa, when things started getting a little bit more out of control for me in terms of my mental health, and our relationship took a hit. I wasn't speaking to her. I was very withdrawn with my own obsessions, my own compulsions. I had all this negative energy and thought that I had to focus on to try to survive. And, she finally just woke me up one day, and, I'd get these kind of like adrenaline rushes, these panic attacks in the middle of the night. I'd be out at my gym at home by like 3 a.m. doing squats and deadlifts, you know, just trying to almost beat this negative emotion out of myself. That I'd sleep in, and she was like, enough's enough, you know, it's time you get help here. This isn't working for us, this isn't working for you, this isn't healthy. So without her, I'm not sure I ever would have come to that realization. So she's given me 3 beautiful children, Miles, Lee, and Devin. Miles, the boy, and our 2 daughters, Lee and Devin, just the absolute lights of my life. And I can't thank her enough for everything she does for me.
Yeah, that's incredible. I think a lot of people like to hear that and go, well, if I'm with someone who is struggling, what do I do? And what do I, you know, how do I help them? And well, besides telling you needed to get help, is there a way about her that helps you when it was tough? Like, lots of us, we don't know what to say, even if we're not necessarily married to someone, but we are good friends maybe with someone we see struggling. Is there a way that she approaches you or has in the past to sort of go, okay, you're not just bugging me, you're actually helping me?
Yeah, difficult, honest conversations that, you know, I think are rooted in compassion and empathy. Like, if you have to pose a difficult question to someone or say something difficult to someone, you need to make sure they know it's coming from an abundance of love and compassion.
Yeah.
You don't just want to go at someone and make them feel attacked.
Yeah.
I think it's always sort of framing that conversation, that narrative, from a place of love.
Hmm.
And that's something she's always done for me. And I know that's a little vague, but I do think it would be unfair of me to try to be super specific because everyone's situation is different.
But, totally.
If you do have to approach someone because you're concerned about their mental health, I think it has to come from a place of compassion. And it has to be explicitly clear to them that, you know, you're wanting to have this difficult conversation with them because you care about them so much and don't feel good about the path they're going down. And out of love, want them to change. And especially for coaching, I think anytime a coach can create an environment or a culture where, you know, an athlete thinks or knows that coach has their best interest at heart,
yeah.
I think your ability as a coach to then, you know, try to get involved and get them help is just going to be met, you know, so much more receptively, right?
Yeah.
You know, I'm such a big proponent for coaching of forming relationships first. Because I think when you have that relationship and trust, that sort of organic relationship and organic trust built, then you can sort of start to dictate, teach, or intervene when necessary. And it's already known that it's just coming from a place of compassion and trust.
Yeah. And, man, you're going to get a lot out of that player, coaches. Like, you are going to get their everything if you give them yours, right? It's just so cool how that can come back and forth. I just love that. Hey, and this is coming from a tough guy, man. You're like a tough guy. That's why I think it's so – it is. I'm telling you, it's valuable coming from you, you know? This stuff is important.
Yeah. Oh, man, you know, like we always say we're the nice guys off the ice. You kind of get got a bit of a switch that flips on the ice.
Yeah.
You cross the wires a little bit, but I think it actually gives you a little bit of perspective off the ice.
Yeah. Okay, Mark, this has been so awesome. We could do this forever. I have some rapid-fire questions I want to ask you because I think it's going to tell us even more about you. And
absolutely.
Yeah, right on. Okay, so you are 100 years old. What is the story you most love to tell?
Now you're going to get me emotional again. it's not going to be a specific story. It's just going to be outside, enjoying the fresh air, exploring nature with my children. I love that more than anything.
Nice. Who or what do you think people see when they see you, and is there something different you wish they would see?
I think they probably see the no teeth and the scars and the crooked nose. But I'd probably like them to see, I think, hopefully the slightly more intellectual, intelligent side than what I put off from appearances.
Nice. What is something people would be surprised to know about you?
I love to read. I love to cook. Those are two things I love to do. It's a little bit of a labor of love for me, cooking. I cook all the meals in my house. I enjoy doing it. I love doing it. I love cooking for people. And I love to read and learn. I love history.
Awesome. What exhausts you?
Oh, geez. Honestly, probably social settings. I actually think I'm one of those people who draws energy from alone time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to say I'm like anti-social. My wife and I enjoy going out for dinners with friends, like stuff like that. But I'm definitely a homebody. I draw energy from being at home.
Nice. So, well, then, what energizes you is my next question.
Oh, I beat you to it. Yeah. Home time for sure. Being out in the fresh air. Like, I love just, you know, we're pretty fortunate. We live on 3 acres. I love being out in the woods with my kids. I love looking at leaves. I love exploring with them, trying to teach them things about nature. Like, that's what gives me energy. And then the other thing for me actually is working out, being physically active. Like, just a huge part of my life.
Love it. What was a moment of intense joy that you have experienced in your life?
Birth of all children, but in particular that first child, Miles, our son. Like, we had a very difficult time conceiving. My wife and I is quite open about her journey with IVF. I think for almost 5 years, we tried to conceive naturally, couldn't do it. And then she just made such a sacrifice for our family and went through IVF. And we were lucky enough to get pregnant on our first round. And she was just an absolute rock for our family. And holding Miles in my arms. You can tell I'm an emotional guy, but
love it.
It's making me tear up again. That was just something I will never forget.
Yeah, quite incredible. All right, we'll end with this. Yeah. Who are two or three people who influenced you, and how did they impact your life?
I'll give a shout out to an old junior coach, Bill Bowker. I had him in Smiths Falls, the tier two team that drafted me as an overager. So I got drafted to the NHL out of Smiths Falls. I got my scholarship at Clarkson out of Smiths Falls. He was heavily involved in Hockey Canada. It was a very, like, Smiths Falls is a very small community, about 45 minutes south of Ottawa. And he was just such a major influence on me, how I handled myself as a man, how I handled myself as an athlete. I owe him a ton. And actually, not to get off track too much, but when our son was born, Miles, I hadn't talked to him in years, and I got a package in the mail, and it was a pair of skates for Miles from Bill Bowker. So that was pretty special. He's a huge one. I'll group my parents into one because they just kind of the love and support they've always shown me. I mean, I could have been -5 in a game, Michelle, just played absolutely terrible, been the worst player on the ice. My parents are like, wow, like, you were great tonight. You had two amazing shots on net. Like, they're just those parents who always supported me. I just love them to death for it. They taught me how to be a parent. And then I'll give you my last one. He's passed away now, but my grandfather, my dad's side, my Jedek, Polish for grandfather, he's kind of given me my love for history. He fought in the Polish resistance in World War II, left home at 15. Just thinking back to his story and what he endured and how he persevered. And then when he came out of all that, all those horrible experiences, concentration camps, all that stuff, he came out of it, he was a painter. Just this like incredibly artistic, emotional man. He painted his memories from the war. I collect all of his paintings. They stay in the family. He was actually like a, I don't know, published painter is the right word, but I'm a collected painter over in Europe. So just gave me some interesting perspective on how to be a man and how to handle yourself and appreciate your emotions even after tough times.
That's amazing. You know, I think many of us know, I think, that professional sport is a pretty cutthroat world. And to have someone like you working in it to make sure these kids really come out as whole human beings, at least as best you can, that's pretty awesome. And thanks for your insight. Thanks for telling us your story, being so open about it. And, man, just incredible. I can't imagine the future you have ahead of you and the people you're going to affect. I think it's going to be great. I think it's amazing. And I feel better for having met you. It's awesome.
Thank you. That just means the world to me to hear you say that. And that's all I want to do now is just kind of help the next crop, the next generation of athletes. Happy to kind of do that wherever it may take, professional hockey, youth hockey, boys hockey, girls hockey, whatever it is. I'm happy to help out. So I appreciate the time, the opportunity to talk, and thank you for this space, and thank you for talking about mental health and making sure that we can have these conversations. I think it's so important for athletes of all ages, so I appreciate you for sure.
There you have it, Mark Borbietsky. If you didn't know him before, you certainly know him now. And more than just that he played hockey in the NHL, right? I'm Michelle Sawatsky-Coop, and there are so many more great stories in the episodes of Heroes in Our Midst. If you'd like to explore them and the resources that go with many of them, head to drtoogood.com. If you'd simply like to listen to more great stories like Mark's, look for Heroes in Our Midst wherever you most love listening to your podcasts. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll talk to you again soon.